And good morning to you, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Show. Orion Samuelson here from my studio in Huntley, Illinois, and outside right now it is 30 degrees. So we're down at that freezing mark, and you heard the forecast for what could be in store for this weekend ahead of Thanksgiving. And we're getting ready for what I call the holiday trading season, because from now until January 2nd, we're going to be impacted on the trading schedule at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange and on Wall Street, because this coming week, markets will be closed as the U.S. celebrates Thanksgiving Day, and there'll be several closings between now and the new year. And among the notes that I'm looking at on my Reuters news service this morning, yesterday, Wisconsin's governor extended a statewide mask mandate. That's despite a legal challenge. And it renews an emergency health order requiring face coverings in public places to curb an alarming surge in the COVID-19 infections. The new decree from Governor Evers of Wisconsin came 6 months after a coronavirus stay-at-home order issued last spring was invalidated by the state Supreme Court in a lawsuit that Republican lawmakers brought against the lockdown. The same court heard oral arguments on Monday in a similar lawsuit brought by a prominent Wisconsin conservative donor contesting the governor's authority to impose an earlier face covering mandate, which is due to expire today. And although medical experts insist that masks are one of the most effective means for breaking the transmission cycle of the highly contagious disease, and that's why mask wearing has become deeply politicized, many Republican politicians led by President Trump have belittled or criticized face coverings as an infringement of personal freedom. So if you're going north to Wisconsin for the Thanksgiving holiday this week, the Wisconsin governor says you must wear face masks in public, and so it'll be interesting to watch how that plays out. At 11 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show, and a cool day, but it looks fairly dry as we go into the weekend. And Max Armstrong is spending the weekend in the Quad Cities of Iowa, and he'll be joining us to tell you why he's out there for the weekend. And in addition to that, Mike Pearson will be joining us to talk agricultural markets, and we'll be talking about other events as well going into the weekend. So we'll check in with Max Armstrong to find out what's going on in the agricultural world out there on the Mississippi River this weekend. So stay with us, because we'll be joining Max here in a minute. We're coming up on 13 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, Max Armstrong spending some time this weekend at an agricultural event out on the Mississippi River. So, Max, tell us what you're doing out there and what's happening this weekend.
Well, good morning, Orion. Perhaps you and some of the listeners have seen those Mecum car auctions on television, where they bring in the muscle cars, and they have those auctions in places like Schaumburg or Indianapolis or Phoenix or Kissimmee, Florida. And those finely restored cars bring some incredible prices. Well, there's a rural version of that, the Mecum Gone Farming auctions. Meekum, based in Walworth, Wisconsin, has these all over the country for the cars, but only in one place, Davenport, Iowa, for the farm tractors. Some of those tractors are superbly restored, and some bring excellent prices. There is one of those auctions going on today. It'll be live on RFD TV later this morning. But the past couple of days, they've held that auction at Davenport through the graces of the governor of Iowa. Now, people were not allowed to attend this time. Generally, we have a great crowd sitting in the chairs as the auction takes place and as it is recorded for television, for broadcast on RFD TV, and as it is shared over the internet. All of the bidding that has been taking place at this auction has either been over the telephone or online through the internet. I talked about that with Max Wilson. Max is in McHenry County, Illinois. He works with John Deere dealership there, and we brought Max in because he helps describe the tractors when they come across the auction block. He's one of the commentators there on the side describing these tractors and their attributes for the audience watching. And Max acknowledged, yeah, this one is just a little bit different than some of the auctions of the past.
Kind of a curveball. It's very different, very quiet. But we're getting through. And, I mean, after one day under our belt, prices still seem to be going pretty good. So evidently everyone's jumping onto the virtual auction world now.
Routinely, there are people who bid over the phone and over the internet for every auction, correct?
Yeah, it's always been available. It's just now we've got to have a lot more people to cover the phones and the internet bids. So far, so good. It seems to be working. I mean, we kind of drag on the item a little bit just because it is a little bit slower, making sure that we're getting all those bids in and recorded, but so far so good. I mean, can't complain about the weather we're having out here, and it's really a shame that people can't be here, but given the current world situation, it's probably for the best.
We see a few people here. Are those individuals who have consigned tractors, and they're certainly socially spaced, they're away from each other, there aren't the crowds gathered together that you normally see here?
Yeah, a lot of it is it's consigners, or it may be people that want to come in and just inspect that tractor that they're really looking at. And I mean, you always want to bid with confidence, so at least we're allowed to let them on the grounds to view that tractor before it crosses a block and make sure it's what they want it to be.
Max, I'm trying to recall, is this the third auction when trucks, antique trucks, have been brought in? Is that number three or is it four?
I believe it is number three. It would have started last November, so a year ago. That's kind of changed the world up here for some of us on commentary. You know, we know the tractors. We know some of the history on the trucks. It's quite interesting when you start getting into some of the different brands and that. Luckily, between me and Carl and Wendell, we're able to muddle through those and it maybe sound like we know what we're talking about. So,
the variety of trucks and very interesting trucks, it strikes me. I mean, you're seeing, yes, farm trucks, nice old farm trucks coming through, some that date back, for example, to the 40s, and then there are some specialty trucks that roll through, and you get a closer look, and you just smile as you see what's going on with that truck.
Yeah, we've got a few customs and a few resto-mod, street-mod type trucks that probably, as some of us as farm boys, looked at Dad's old truck and go, man, this thing is just slower than molasses. We need to just hop it up a little bit, and that's what they've done, is hopped them up a little bit, and really, the paint jobs and everything, you really get an idea of what some of these old farm trucks have become over the years.
But we also see some fire trucks. We see some fuel trucks, antique fuel trucks coming through. There was something that looked like a rolling popcorn machine. Actually, it was for circuses, I guess, or festivals. It not only made popcorn, but you could get a snow cone there. You could get a fountain drink. What was that all about?
Well, that was pretty much someone purpose-built that machine, and they had a fountain in there for your sodas, coffee, popcorn, any of the things. It kind of think about it like you're walking down the midway at the fair. That would have been something that caught your eye, and you could have gone over, and it was pretty much a turnkey operation. It was ready to go. I think probably the only thing would have been to have your local health board just check off on it, make sure everything was up to spec. If I recall, it did not sell. It bid up fairly high, but it wasn't quite enough for the seller to let go of it.
I mentioned fire trucks. There was one from California here, and it was back in the early days of motorized apparatus, and it was a caddy chassis, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was actually a Cadillac that they had converted into a fire truck. The local fire agency there, as the population was expanding, decided that they needed a fire truck, and that's what they found was a couple-year-old Cadillac and converted it into a fire truck. Probably the only one you'll ever see. It was actually pretty neat, nice shape. It ran nice.
Did you look at the water tank over there?
Yeah.
My spot sprayer tank is bigger than that.
Yeah, I don't think you would want to put out much more than a little campfire with that unless you had access to some more water to get on it. So,
one of the real attractions of this auction, and we alluded to this earlier, is the fact that people come together and friends gather here and really enjoy the conversation and the contacts that are made. And sometimes there's follow-up, I would imagine, between tractor owners and truck owners to purchase a piece of equipment or maybe negotiate a sale on down the road sometime.
Yeah, there's a lot of that that goes on, you know. And, of course, Mecum, they've got the bid goes on. If it doesn't sell, you can always work with Mecum and the consigner and try and get a deal struck. But yeah, there's a lot of friendships that are made and relationships. I've got to say, I've made a great circle of friends working these auctions and just getting to know a lot of our buyers and sellers.
The folks in Mecum also provide transportation, and I know some of this stuff goes all over the country. Do some of these pieces sometimes get put in a container and shipped to another nation, Max?
I know there's been a few occasions where that has happened. I can't recall any of them specifically right now, but I mean, it is really, and especially when you're going with the internet and the phone bidding, it's become a worldwide market at these larger tractor auctions like this.
Max Wilson from McHenry County, he's in that Marengo, Harvard area, and he's one of three commentators who'll sit there alongside the auction ring as those antique tractors, some of them absolutely superbly restored, and some of them have never been touched. They've never been restored. They look the way they did when they came out of the plant in Rock Island, Illinois for International Harvester, or in Racine, Wisconsin for J.I. Case, or Waterloo, Iowa for John Deere. And when they look that good, as they might have the day they were manufactured, they can bring incredible prices. But Max sits there along with Carl Downs. Carl is out in the Iroquois County area, south of Chicago. He's one of the commentators. And Wendell Kelch, who is a well-known tractor restorer from Ohio, is always there alongside them commenting on the tractors and describing how those tractors look and describing what individuals have done to those tractors, sometimes to customize them. Some of these are made specifically by a guy in his shop to go out on a tractor ride. They may put some steps on it to make it easier to get up there. They may put a bigger seat on it, one with perhaps extra shock absorbers on it for a tractor ride. Or they'll put a box on the back of it where you can put not just tools and gloves, but maybe a tow strap or maybe a cooler for a tractor ride. And it's just really interesting to see what they've done to these. And some of these tractors, Orion, were advertised by Orion Samuelson on radio and television back in the day when they were coming out of International Harvester. And the prices were pretty good the past couple of days. They'll continue the auction today there at Davenport, Iowa. Again, it is not open to the public, but there will be an hour when the auction can be seen today on RFD-TV. Actually, it's a two-hour broadcast that'll start at 10:30 this morning. 2 hours on RFD-TV from the Mecum Fall Premiere. Some of the prices have been very good. A farmer friend of ours out in Kane County took a tractor to the auction at Davenport, hoping to get $16,000 for that International Harvester, a gold demonstrator, and he got $17,000 for it, so that's not bad at all. It's a good time, by all means, for those who get together, and they hope to get together again in the spring. They'll do one of these auctions again in March, and those who attend, who really enjoy the experience and appreciate the old tractors, hope to be able to do that again. You can get more information online at Mecum.com. Orion?
All right, Max. It's interesting what's happened over the years to some of the vehicles, automobiles, and now the tractor community is getting into it as well. And it was interesting hearing your visit and the friendships that have been made through these auctions. This is the Mecum Tractor Auction. auction going on again today, and you'll find it on RFD TV, at least for parts of it. The good news in a world of distressing news is the cost of the average Thanksgiving dinner. Every year, the American Farm Bureau conducts a survey to get the cost of a Thanksgiving dinner for 10 people. And the information came out yesterday that the average cost for a Thanksgiving dinner for 10 people, $46.90. Think about that for a moment, less than $5 a person. And another reason to say thank you to America's farmers for doing what they do to provide a food supply despite the COVID situation and anything else that might interrupt. And actually, the cost of the Thanksgiving dinner, and this was the 35th annual survey of classic items found on the Thanksgiving Day dinner table, it indicates the average cost of this year's Feast for 10, $46.90, and that is a $2 decline from last year's average of $48.91. So enjoy that turkey on Thanksgiving Day, because America's farmers are certainly out there to produce the turkeys for that festive holiday. And one other quick note that we want to share with you as we move into the holiday season, and it begins this coming week. The market closures because of the holiday season, the markets for grain and livestock will be closed at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. So make note of that. Make your marketing plans accordingly. And again, something I think that farmers can be thankful for is we've pretty much wound down the harvest season without a major weather problem during the harvest season, like heavy rains that stopped the combines. And that didn't happen this year. Combines, it's been tradition in agriculture that farmers like to have the combines parked and put away into the machine shed for the season by Thanksgiving Day. And I think we pretty well hit that mark this year because of the harvest weather and the lack of rain moving through the Midwest and the rest of the production area. So at least families on the farms should be able to enjoy the family Thanksgiving dinner and not be concerned about the crop still standing in the field, because the report, I think, on Monday said 92 or 93% of the corn and soybean crops have been harvested and the combine parked. More to come here on the Saturday morning show. We'll check news headlines and we'll check other activity. And Mark Pearson will be joining us with his market guest a little bit later. I'll have some things to say on Samuelson Says. Not my things, but interesting, because years ago I discovered on the internet the Farmer's Creed, written as far as we can determine back in 1915 by an Illinois farmer who shared his thoughts on what it means to be a farmer, regardless of the year, regardless of the weather. So stand by, because we'll share that with you a little bit later on Samuelson Says. And there's more to come here on the Saturday Morning Show. And we're at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show, and we appreciate your company at this early hour, because at the end of the year, December 31, the Saturday Morning Show will move into the hands of Lou Manfredini, who add an hour of time to his discussion on the many things that need fixing in your house or in your home. And Lou will be taking over this hour because I'll be retiring. At least I have been told you think you'll retire, but you won't. And since I've had several friends who have flunked retirement at least two or three times, yeah, the temptation will be there because I will miss being with you here on the Saturday morning show. So it's time for Samuelson Says to present, well, this week, not my thoughts, but thoughts that were written in 1915, as far as we can determine. It's written by a farmer from Illinois entitled The Farmer's Creed. And I'll share that with you when we continue. About 100 years ago, an article was written by an Illinois farmer. Frank Mann was his name, and he titled it The Farmer's Creed. And during this week of Thanksgiving, I want to share it with you as written by the Illinois farmer. Quote, I believe in a permanent agriculture, a soil that will grow richer rather than poorer from year to year. I believe that the only good weed is a dead weed, and that a clean farm is as important as a clean conscience. I believe in the farm boy and the farm girl, the farmer's best crops and the future's best hopes. I believe in the farm woman and will do all in my power to make her life easier and happier. I believe in the country school that prepares for country life and a country church that teaches its people to love deeply and live honorably. I believe in community spirit, a pride in home and neighbors, and I will do my part to make my community the best in the state. I believe in the farmer. I believe in farm life. I believe in the inspiration of the open country. I am proud to be a farmer and will try earnestly to be worthy of that name. And I believe when a man grows old and sums up his days, he should be able to stand tall and feel pride in the life that he has lived. I believe in farming because it makes all of this possible. The words written by an Illinois farmer in 1915, to the best information I can find, but it's certainly worth repeating and living during the week of Thanksgiving and the holiday season. So be safe, be well. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Nexstar Media Group, 21 minutes before 7 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. And as we look ahead to the many activities and events, they certainly are going to be different this year during the holiday season because of COVID-19. I'm often asked the impact of COVID-19 on agriculture. And one of the subjects I want to use to respond to those questions came to me this week from the American Lamb Board that works with the U.S. Meat Export Federation to monitor and build export markets for many products produced on American farms. But this morning, I want to spend a minute or so talking about the impact on the American lamb industry, because the Meat Export Federation carries out market access and development activities in more than 90 countries in an effort to increase the value and the profitability of U.S. lamb, beef, and pork. So here are some of the numbers from the American Lamb Board. the 2019, the American lamb industry exported 15,732 metric tons of products, including variety meats, a 22% increase from 2018. The key export markets for American lamb in 2019 included Mexico, the Caribbean, the Middle East, and Canada. Although exports to Asia in 2019 remained slow, recent access to Taiwan and Japan has created opportunities in high-end food service. In 2020, COVID-19 has impacted American lamb exports due to the pandemic and its effect on tourism, and during the world market's cutback in consumption. Food service and the tourism-dependent markets like the Caribbean, Middle East, Japan, and Taiwan heavily impacted by the COVID-19 shutdowns. And domestically, supply of American lamb has been disrupted not only by pandemic issues, but by the closure of mountain states earlier this year. We can't sell into the export market what we are unable to produce and process. This year has brought a challenge to all sectors of the American lamb industry never seen before. And in the closing comment, a bright spot in the export picture rests on opportunities in Japan and Taiwan. Similar to the U.S. market, Japan experienced a retail surge as a result of COVID-19 because of food service options that were limited and consumers opted to eat at home. And as a result, the U.S. Meat Export Federation shifted 2020 promotional funds in Japan from fine dining and chef education to retail. The U.S. Meat Export Federation partnered with a Japanese retailer to launch new American lamb products, including boneless shoulder and steaks in their 10 stores. So what impact did the COVID-19 situation have on the lamb industry and the lamb producers here in the U.S.? Indeed, it did, because of the situation and the COVID-19 spread around the world. So I hope you lamb producers will be able to survive the COVID-19 situation, and we'll continue to talk about the other areas of agriculture that indeed have been impacted. Right now, time to talk markets, and for that, every week we turn to our market reporting guest, Mark Pearson. So let's take a look at what happened in the livestock industry this week.
Well, talking prices, we've got to talk commodity prices. Joining us today is Dave Bauer from Provemia, division of Cargill Animal Nutrition. Dave, you are in the hog space. When you take a look at this past year and this year going forward, what's your headline when it comes to the hog markets?
Well, I think you have to mention China. And from a demand standpoint for pork, and from a competitive standpoint in feed grains, China has driven the market to this point. And I think we'll continue to see that, whether it be on the pork side or whether that be on the grain side.
Well, and that's the thing. Over the past several weeks, well, 2 months almost, we've been talking about the rally in the grains. We haven't seen it nearly as pronounced in the meat markets. When you look at Chinese demand here in this year ahead, do you think they're going to continue buying at the same pace they have been on the pork side here in the U.S.?
And that is the million-dollar question. And they've got a lot of pork on the books. And I think they, just this past week on Thursday, they did go into 2021 and put out one of the biggest purchases we've seen thus far in 2021. And I think they will continue to be a buyer, and we'll be watching those shipments closely as well, because they've got a big book on the purchase, and we'll see when they start, or we want them to continue to be shipping that pork. Into 2021, there's a lot of talk about China growing their hog herd and being able to produce their own pork. And, you know, that's a very complex question as well, deserves a complex answer when it comes to the sow herd versus the hog production herd, and then how that comes into pork production.
Well, I think that opens up a question that a lot of folks have asked. When we listen to China talking about their domestic markets, how much can we trust those numbers, or what do you rely on when you're looking at Chinese hog herd growth going forward?
Well, one of the key things that we'll rely on are those consultants that travel to China 100 to 150 days a year, and they've not been able to do that since January. So our typical information flow has not been able to really get good, solid information. What you see out of China today is basically what they want you to see, and it's very difficult to be able to really understand that. And when they compare increases in production to prior year, last year at this time was the absolute bottom of production, or the lowest part of their herd, whether it be the sow herd or the hog herd. And so when we compare to that, we're comparing to a very low level. But the question you always need to answer is, what are we comparing to?
What are we comparing to? And I think the question is, what is China looking to buy? Earlier in the pandemic, we saw China buying a lot of whole hogs, or half hogs anyway, and then they were completing the cutting domestically. Yeah. As you look ahead to this year, do you anticipate that to continue? Are they jumping in whole hog, so to speak?
I would say, yeah, they continue to be on the whole hog. I think they prefer that. And we'll have to see. We're gonna have to get used to them being into the market and out of the market. Mm-hmm. That's just their style. And a lot of times we have to deal with them also canceling purchases.
When you look at this fall, we have seen grain producers rejoicing after this rally in the grain markets. However, it has put livestock producers in a pinch. How should folks, livestock producers in particular, be managing this margin heading into the winter?
Yes, and that does become an issue. And when you look at the time of year that it is, it's a fall time, and typically during harvest, we don't see the kind of rally that we've seen this year. And it started, back in September when USDA reduced carry-in stocks by 258 million bushel. That was a big change to the crop as we came into this year. There's another thing that really is playing big into it, and that's China and the purchases that China have on the books. Typically in an average year we see, or I should say from a purchase standpoint, the purchases that they have this year, if they take all those purchases, that would be close to 1,000% more than they have over the last 3 years. So that in itself, they have banned swill feeding in China due to the African swine fever and trying to control that. So not only can they not originate feed from swill feeding, they've had some crop damage, maybe 5-10% of their crop lost to flood. So they have to originate feed. And so ownership, 9/10 of the law, as they say, China has come in and put a very big book on, which is going to compete with the U.S. producer when it comes to feed. So if they haven't already, they're going to definitely need to be preparing for 2021 and feed costs. And I don't know that we're done with where we are today. I think my model would show that with a 1.7 billion bushel carryover in corn, 404 in March corn is a good base price, and then you can add some premium to that. So trading in the 430 range now, that's probably fair value, but there are some thoughts that could continue to work higher.
So for producers who were maybe relying on harvest season in anticipation of getting some cheaper grain with regard to basis, how should they be managing those prices going forward? Should we be buying just straight off the combine and then hedging?
Well, there's a lot of the corn that came off the combine went into storage. Mm-hmm. And with beans doing what they did, producers sold beans off the combine to take advantage of that market. And now they have to pry that corn off of the farm. So we have seen basis levels firming in some regions and where that's pulling it out. Another thing to think about as well is with the vaccine talk that we've seen for COVID, if we start to see a population that's becoming more confident and more healthy and traveling more, that's going to be more gas usage and then more potential blending for corn. Mm-hmm. For ethanol. So there's a tug of war that could potentially happen on down the road as well, trying to pull that corn off farm, going to the river for export, going to ethanol, or going to feed use.
Dave, before we let you go, this past year has seen a lot of challenges for food service, restaurants, hospitals, schools, etc. As you look at this winter, is that starting to come back?
Well, we started to see that come back, and then with another surge in COVID across rural America, we've seen things slow down a little bit, and I think the retail level will continue to be strong, but we can only hope that we can keep the demand going from all levels of food service.
Thanks to Dave Bauer from Provimi. Appreciate the conversation.
This week, received the invitation to attend the National Agricultural Outlook Forum. That's the largest annual meeting and premier event of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And here's the invitation and the dates. And of course, it will be different because of COVID-19 this year. But the two-day forum will take place February 18 and 19. And due to COVID-19 and current auctions and restrictions on large gatherings in the Washington, D.C. area, the USDA Outlook Forum will be, here's that word again, virtual. And that's the first time in the history of the event. Actually, this is the 93rd Agricultural Outlook Forum. Its theme this year, Building on Innovation, a Pathway to Resilience, builds on USDA's Agriculture Innovation Agenda, which was launched earlier this year to align USDA's resources, programs, and research toward the goal of increasing U.S. agricultural production by 40% while cutting the environment footprint of U.S. agriculture in half by the year 2050. The 2021 forum will be announced early next month in December, and USDA's Agricultural Outlook Forum began in 1923 to talk agriculture in our nation's capital. I've attended that session several times during my career, always fascinating, with one of the highlights being the report from the chief economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, who will present his latest outlook for U.S. commodity markets and trade and discuss the U.S. farm income situation. And I might mention that this year's forum will be free. No registration charge, but registration is open. The event takes place February 18 and 19. More to come when we continue with the Saturday morning show. It's a minute and a half away from our 6 o'clock news coverage this morning, but this story caught my eye this week. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association will be holding its annual meeting at the Opryland Hotel, not in February, but they'll postpone it until August. That session will be held, and one of the notes I got from the cattleman started out by saying, "Are you a singing star?" NCBA's 7th Annual National Anthem Singing Contest is now open to current members of the NCBA and the women's group. The contest singer will sing the Star Spangled Banner at the opening general session at the Cowboy Night at the Opry on Thursday, August 12. But you can enter now. The deadline for entry is May 14, 2021. Well, that's our time for this morning here on the Saturday Morning Show. As always, thank you for joining us. My thanks to Bob Ferguson, who does the engineering work for this program.